All right, we'll get started. If you don't mind, I'm going to pray. You guys have been going strong and prayed throughout, but I'm going to pray for myself as we get going, okay? Let's pray. Lord, I thank you so much for today, just for this opportunity to share information that can make a difference both in whoever is in this room listening as well as who they share for the rest of their life. I just thank you for biology and your creation and the mix of how we can learn and understand healing and how to be healthy. So I pray that you'll lead me to share what's most important to each person here. In your name, amen. All right, as we get started, I'll introduce myself a little bit. I'm Dr. Julie Hayden. I'm a licensed psychologist and do a few things at this point in different areas. Throughout kind of coming along this road, I've always shared a passion for scripture, and the foundation in Bible was at the beginning, and then I entered into the psychology field, which is not always something that, you know, you would think goes together. For me, it did very naturally, and I've greatly enjoyed it. I think for us to understand how the body and brain works, for us to understand people and relationships, trauma and healing, that's something that should be natural to Christians. And if we come from that biblical perspective, we have an edge on everybody else because we have access to certain truth. So that's kind of my background. Right now, we have a university, Rhombus University, with a master's program for training therapists. We have a few counseling centers in Orange County, San Diego, and El Centro. And we do a lot with trauma. It's kind of our expertise. It's been really fun because there's some tools out there today in how the brain works that makes healing even more realistic than some of the other times. And then for us, in times when it's appropriate to have Christ in the middle of everything, it's a game changer. So there's a lot of opportunity that I'll share with you today. So that's a little bit about me. We'll go on and kind of get what we're planning today. I use PowerPoints to keep myself on track, but that's it. And do you know you're going to click for me? I just hope magically, okay, good. Okay, so to start off, before we want to get our brain back, I'm curious what you're thinking. I'd like to know you guys, and I'll even switch things up a bit just to make this valuable for you if I know where you're coming from. So these are some things that I already know can cause what you could say is brain damage. You could also say rewiring. You know, you're not hitting your head and having physical damage sometimes. That can happen too. But you are, you know, having a wiring of your brain that sets you up for difficulty. So that's kind of what we're talking about. So I have some of this trauma, so terrible things that happen. One of the reasons why it can cause a brain to switch up and look different is because your brain can't make sense of it. So if something happens that your brain can't make sense of, it does something very different. It stores memories in different places. It haunts you later in life. It helps you interpret things completely inaccurately because something happened that couldn't fit in your brain. Your brain couldn't make sense of it. So that's kind of trauma. You know, you can have severe situations of kids that have gone through things that are trauma. As an adult, you can go through things that just messes with your head. It doesn't make sense. You can't fit it in your brain. If you think of PTSD from military, they go to war. Part of the problem with why they're stuck with something haunting them is because they saw it and it could not fit into what they knew of the world. And so that's very different. We'll talk about that later. Stress, which is interesting, stress can actually do just about the same amount of damage. And when we look at the brain, we'll talk about why. So if you lived in a stressful environment growing up, sometimes that can do just as much as if you actually experienced something you would consider trauma. Alcohol, substance abuse, this stuff can definitely change your brain. There's hope, though. That's good. And unhealthy patterns of lies. We'll talk about that. So I'd like to get some from you. What can you think throughout your life, if you feel comfortable sharing, you're like, okay, that just took some of my brain. You know, like, that just caused problems. That was something that might have, you know, given me less brain cells. Anybody want to share? Just throw out ideas. Yeah. Depression, absolutely. That messes with all your chemicals. Yeah. What else? Oh, yes. Toxic relationships. Absolutely. What else? Yes. Yeah. That's going to have physical consequences as well as how the brain's wired. Things are going to be difficult later. Yes. Okay. It'll come back. Go for it, and then I'll go over here. Yes. Okay. Growing up without a parent. Come in here, and then I'll go back. Yes. Ooh, anxiety. You'll learn. I'm going there today because that's fun. It messes with your brain in a very different way. Back here and then up here. Yeah. Yes. Insomnia. Yes. Absolutely. Yeah, but that's true. Now, you guys are also looking at probably some things you experience often just because of life. And yet it can really have an impact here because you remembered. We have to get it quick. Victim mentality. Wow, you guys are great. You're going to see this in some of my slides. Good job. Parents getting divorced. I'm just going to throw this out real quick. We're going to look at some of the things through research and science and scanning brains that show some of the most negative consequences from childhood to adulthood. Number two on the list, tied with a parent that's an alcoholic, is parents getting a divorce. Yeah, back over here. Ooh, unrealistic expectations. And that can go two ways. Yes, yeah, very good. Yep, and that's also stress. So emotional and verbal abuse that you're experiencing, you have to walk on eggshells. You don't know what you're walking into. That level of stress, that can almost be just as damaging if you're actually in a physical abusive situation. Mm-hmm. Yep. Yeah. Some of these are also the consequence of something already that you live with that we want to heal from. Very good. Okay, let's get going. This one I want to talk about because it's going to be at the core of why there's actual physical brain damage, okay? So I got to take you on the road to the brain, but it's going to be fun in the end, so just trust me and go with it, okay? So how the brain works, you have something called the autonomic nervous system, and it is what works automatically. So give me some things that work just fine in your body that you don't have to tell it to, it just happens. Your heart rate. Okay, your heart's just going to beat. Unless something's really wrong, these things are just going to work. Yeah, breathing. Yeah, all your intestines, liver, every organ, it just works. Walking. No, it doesn't. No, sorry. I was going to have like something creative, but it's just no. Like, it doesn't just work automatically, but that's okay. That's okay. But I like where you're going, so we're going to get to your side soon, but not yet. Automatic. Go for it. Wait, somebody had something, no? Digestion, yeah. Okay, so all these things that just work automatically, okay? Other things, well, I probably have it on you. Oh, I have all the answers, some of them. So your heart rate, breathing, immune system, okay? Your digestion, sex drive, drinking, like if you're thirsty or you're hungry, all of that just works automatically. Somebody had one more thing. Yeah. Sight? Sure. So your senses, you don't have to teach a kid. They're born and boom, they just start using all their senses. We're going to come to that as a tool later because your senses are wiring your brain. When you're born, baby, all they have to do is gain sensory information. Hearing, seeing, watching, you know, all this stuff, touching. That's just wiring up the brain. And if everything's good to go, it just wires up how it's supposed to. And so there'd have to be some interference with that we'll talk about. And then it also can turn into a tool later, engaging your senses, okay? So how this works, we're going to keep on this slide for just a little bit. That autonomic nervous system has two parts, sympathetic, parasympathetic. Parasympathetic, everything's fine. Hopefully right now all of you guys are in your parasympathetic nervous system. Your heart rate's fine. Your breathing's normal. Everything's just normal. If your life was in danger, you'd switch over into sympathetic, which is called fight or flight. Okay? It's actually great if your life's in danger, right? It's going to protect you. So as soon as you feel like your life's in danger, then you're pumped full of adrenaline, which is pretty great. So if you had to fight, you might not feel pain. If you had to run away really fast, people are lifting up cars because their kids are in danger. Adrenaline's fantastic, but it runs out fast. So then it switches over to something called cortisol. Cortisol is called the stress hormone. And as this is pumping through your body and your brain, it turns off your digestive system, turns off your immune system, and it turns off your prefrontal cortex, which is your good thinking brain. It's literally shut off, which is why you do a whole bunch of stupid stuff in that mode, okay? You have a reason for it. So this part's turned off. But the thing about kids is they don't even have a prefrontal cortex. So if this stress response is activated in a kid, it changes brain development. It will rewire their brain differently than a person that didn't experience that. And then you'll look at the scan of a brain. Here's a kid that had stress, trauma, what their brain looks like. Here's a kid that didn't. It'll look different. And then you reinterpret your entire world based on that type of wiring. So we'll look at that. So with this fight or flight response, it's really important because you can activate it with fear, which is what it's meant for. Your life's in danger. But you can also activate it with stress or anger. So if we activate this when there's not really a life or death situation, we can have a lot of health consequences, as well as our whole brain getting wired differently when it doesn't need to be. And that's what we're going to talk about today. And when you're a kid and you're going through emotional abuse, verbal abuse, sexual abuse, any kind of these extreme situations, which includes parents getting a divorce, because what we'll learn today is it's not necessarily what happened, it's how you interpreted it. So if you look at kids, almost every single adult over here, 40 years old, talking about it all, going back, remembering, well, was there anything negative you believed about yourself when your parents got a divorce? It was my fault. Something was wrong with me. I did this, and my dad left the next day. Almost every single time, how they interpreted it was they took the shame of it. They took that something was wrong with them, and that's why it all happened, which is a lie. And so some of what the healing is replacing those lies that you kept forever with truth. So we'll look at that. And that's actually physically happening in the brain, which is really cool. So if you believed one thing about an event and then you change to believing a different thing, that's rewiring in the brain in a physical way. Brain's pretty cool. Okay? So with this system, we'll look at it later a little bit more, but let's look at childhood and how it changes. So go ahead and actually go to the next slide. So we'll move up into adult life here soon, but I want to go back and look. So this is a study called the ACE study. It stands for Adverse Childhood Experiences, and it was out of Kaiser's in the 90s, and they did like 17,000 people. It was Kaiser, so it was anybody and everybody, which is important because sometimes when you do studies, you trap people. So like military, college students, or prison, and then when you study it, you can't really say that that information's good for everybody because they're just a select group. But here, anybody and everybody coming through Kaiser. So the information was really good. And then they repeated it a bunch of times. They're still repeating it. So what they found is broadly, these negative childhood experiences led to domestic violence, addictions, getting a divorce when you're an adult, not keeping a job. There's all this list of negative things in adulthood that was tied back to, you know, what happened when people were kids. And jumping forward, when we could scan brains, we knew why. So some of these negative experiences are literally changing your brain physically, setting you up for seeing the world in a negative way, for being pessimistic, not having hope, having depression, anxiety. It's biological. Very interesting. So here's just a list. It could be this study had questions revolving around abuse, neglect, whether somebody as a kid witnessed domestic violence, substance abuse within the home. I'm talking too fast so I can't breathe, so bear with me. I do that. Mental illness, a family member committing suicide, marital discord. I don't know why divorce isn't on there, but it is on the next well, maybe the next slide, but divorce was one of them, somebody in prison. So keep going. I don't remember what the next slide is. Okay, so how it works biologically would be those adverse childhood experiences mess up your neurodevelopment, which messes up social, emotional, and cognitive impairment, leading to high-risk behaviors, disease. So you have health consequences, too. Today, we're kind of hopefully looking at, you know, how it impacts your life, relationships, things like that. But you can have a higher rate of heart attack, all kinds of other health problems with this, too. And then early death. So not a good ending, you know, but we're going to reverse that today. So that's great. So we'll have a happy ending eventually. Okay, keep going. Here's some evidence, so you can look at this. There's other things. It could be a very long list of what we could see, but these are some I thought you might be able to connect with. So impulsivity, so just reacting without thinking. It's a good sign that your prefrontal cortex has not been, you know, handled well. So depression, negativity. So I want you to take a moment for some of the stories you've already shared a little bit about, in that when you have those negative experiences, it's, say, early on. Let's just go to early childhood just for a moment, and we'll kind of walk it out. When you're a baby, all you need, you have to have your diaper changed, food, somebody to hug you. There's not a lot. It's pretty easy, and yet it doesn't happen sometimes. So the idea of a healthy relationship when you're a baby is you have a need, and the person meets it quickly. You have a need, they meet it quickly. In the brain, what that looks like is there's something wrong, and now I get help. There's something wrong, and it's going to be okay. So deep inside your brain very early on, you either have, might get bad, but it's going to probably be good soon, and that's hope. Or you cry, nobody helps. You know, you have a need, nobody's handling it. So deep within your brain and how you're wired is, why try? Nobody's coming. Nobody's going to help. Why even go there? So you can see how early on it will have this long-lasting effect on the rest. And you may put yourself in positions that you wouldn't have if you had hope, but because you don't think anybody's coming, you don't care, you put yourself into situations where it can get even worse. And then everything you think is going to happen happens because you put yourself into that. So even really early on, it has a big impact. But as you go through in kind of looking at, you know, the different ages as you grow up, some of those ages, you're supposed to be able to, you know, have this safety, your family that you can count on, and you go out and you be adventurous and you're safe, come back. And if you can't have some of that, you have other things like, I'm not capable. Why even try? I'm just going to fail. I always fail anyways. So you can see how it's from your environment, but you get the own messages in your brain. And they are lies most of the time. And usually you can test it by just putting somebody else you care about over here, and you look at that person and you say, you know, what I tell them, like, hey, it's your fault. You're an idiot. Why'd you do that? Like, no. They're five, you know, it was not their fault. So when we put it out on somebody else, we can see that. We're like, no, it's not that person's fault at all. And yet on us, we go, yep, my fault. Something's wrong with me, something. And we carry that. And it's not just that you believe these things. It's changing your brain. And it's going to impact how you make decisions, who you feel comfortable hanging out with, you know, what you think you want in a relationship. Anything like that can be affected in your brain and how you interpret what's going on with you in these negative events you just described. So depression, negativity, you'll see that. There's a, just like a bent that pretty much everything's going to go wrong, or I don't deserve anything good, or, you know, this can happen. Hypervigilance, which is just a cool word. So I could just use it. But it's like when you're on edge. You feel like at any moment something bad's going to happen. Somebody's going to get you from behind, you know. So hypervigilance can be this red flag to you. Now, why are you always on edge? Well, maybe you have been for a very long time, and that's in you biologically. Chaos, drama, somebody said that. I think they said, like, victimization, too, where, you know, at one point, usually a person truly was a victim. But if you get stuck in that, then it's like everything bad happens to me, and it doesn't matter. It seems like every week something terrible's happening. Like, how is this attracted to this person where something terrible's happening? every week. Sometimes it's hard to explain in a short period of time, but it's connected. So being stuck in that role that you're the victim and that bad things are always going to happen to you. So drama, chaos, this can be a sign. Everywhere you go, drama, chaos, this could be a sign. You may not see it. It might be others that see it in you. But hopefully today you'll at least reflect. Emotionality, where emotions are all over the place. Some of that is just normal and it gets better with time. Some of that could be a sign. Blaming victim or the persecutor. So either role. And these things are roles you play, not necessarily that they're true. So you could play, poor me, I'm the victim, oh, the world's out to get me. Or you could play, I'm the bad guy, I always get into trouble, it's always my fault. And you could be that in your family, you could be that with your friends, where you're playing these roles. It's just easy for you to be the bad guy. You're like, yeah, I've always been the bad guy, might as well, I'll be the bad guy in this relationship. But it's not real, it's that you feel comfortable there and you play this role. That's a sign. Something's, you're not able to just be a person in a relationship. You can't just communicate what you want in a healthy way. You've got to play a role to kind of sneak in what you want. So that's a red flag. What's going on with that? Risk-taking behavior could be a sign. Definitely lack of hope. That comes from deep. So if you just don't think things are going to be better, it's a red flag. It's probably not you or reality. It's how you interpreted the world from what you experienced, most likely. Because wouldn't you agree, even with, you could think if this is something you struggle with, think of everybody else. In reality, there's probably hope. There just is, probably, in a real situation, and yet you'll be convinced there's no hope. Something's wrong with that, right? Why are we going against reality? Okay, let's keep going. One more on just some of the consequences. Is thinking about it. I can't do it. Okay. So I don't know if I can read it, but I'll try. These are risk factors as an adult when you have had these adverse childhood experiences that we've described. Traumatic brain injury, fractures, burns. You're just at higher risk of getting hurt. Okay? Depression, anxiety, suicide, PTSD, unintended pregnancy, pregnancy complications, fetal death, HIV, STDs, cancer, diabetes, alcohol, drug use, unsafe sex, education, occupation, income that's lower than the average. These are just risk factors. So it doesn't mean it's going to happen to you, but it's good to know the risk factors. And then what we'll talk about next, how to fix it. So let's keep going. Okay. So I'm going to put it into four categories, but it was really frustrating because they all overlap. So just bear with me because they're just going to all overlap, especially how I view it. I'm talking about the brain, and yet I love my Bible, right? I don't see much distinction. There's never a time our biology is without our spiritual self in this world. One day, we won't have our physical bodies, but right now we do. There would always be, you know, why is it genetics and biology, or is it environment and how people raised us? Both. There's never a time your biology is without your environment or your environment without your biology. It's all working together and affecting. I could change my brain. I could tomorrow go around grouchy and negative for about a week and my brain would be physically changed. I could fake smile. This is a social psychology experiment. I could fake smile for a week and my brain would be changed and I'd be happier. So go fake smile. So it's really cool how we can change our brain and people may not realize it. So we're going to look at relationships, community, physical health, spiritual health, and responsibility. Let's go to the first one, relationships, community. For those that have had severe trauma, and their entire brain is wired differently, it's discouraging. And I always say, when I'm talking to populations, I don't know where you come from, so you may have had that in your past. But I give them hope because in research, in science, in understanding the brain, you know, the one thing that can rewire your brain into looking healthy as if there was no trauma. Any guesses? Healthy relationships. We don't even know why. I think I know why, but science is like, who knows? There's like guesses on, you know, how your brain works with physical interaction and face and connection and, you know, all these things. But to me, I see it connecting with scripture, how God created people. You know, you have Adam and Eve, go multiply, subdue the earth. And it was repeated after the fall. And, you know, in New Testament, hey, go multiply, subdue the earth. We were built for relationships. Relationships heal our brain. So if you did one thing, it would be have healthy relationships. The problem is, if you come from toxic background, then you have this special magic radar for the worst people. So, like, and you might have even experienced this where, you know, you're like, this person's unhealthy for me. I'm leaving this person. And then you meet another one, and they're just perfect, except for the exact same person. And everybody else sees it, you know, and they're like, no, this person's not good for you. No, you don't understand. You don't see what I see. And then, you know, eventually, like, wait, no, this is an unhealthy person. This is not what I need. And then you go to another, and we have this magic radar to draw us to what is unhealthy for us. And that is until we heal. That's a mystical sense, you know, when are we going to heal? But as you get healthier, and there's various ways we'll look at you can do that, then when you're inside a healthy person, you'll naturally be attracted to a healthy person. But until you get there, if you're like, wow, this person's amazing, walk away. Okay, so who you're naturally attracted to may not be what's great for you. So first of all, how do you build healthy relationships? This is going to be kind of for the rest of your life. How do you build community? How do you connect? How do you have healthy relationships? Just to kind of sum up for time's sake, one thing you want is to be able to share openly in a healthy way. So if you find yourself being passive aggressive, where you can't just be open, you find a way to sneak in communication, or you figure they should know instead of telling them, that could be a red flag. If you are aggressive or they're aggressive, I define aggressive as you're getting your truth known at somebody's expense. Somebody gets to lose because you're honest. Okay, that's aggression. And passive is you're not going to communicate at all. So it could look like the best, most peaceful relationship because somebody is just not sharing any truth. They're not giving you who they are. They're not communicating. So in that, you know, passive could be a red flag. Why don't they feel comfortable saying what they want? What do you want to eat? I don't know. It's up to you. Like, but, you know, some of that just seems to be a pattern with one of the genders. But it could be if you don't feel like you can communicate honestly with the person, that's a red flag. If they can't communicate honestly with you, what they want, what they need, and everything's okay, then that's a red flag. And that can go for friendships, that can go for intimate relationships. So keep that in mind. Who are your friends? Are you able to share? Are they able to share? This is an important thing. If you have even one healthy friend and that lasts for a little while, you can start healing your brain. It's pretty impressive. So even though that you're here, this is a good sign because hopefully out of whoever you're connected with, you find one or two good friends, relationships, and you'll be in a good spot. But you'd be surprised how hard that is for some. So remove toxic relationships. So this may be important. So how are you in their presence? How does it affect you? Sometimes if you had, you know, maybe an angry, aggressive parent, and now you're attracted to a person, could be a friend, not even in a relationship, who's angry and aggressive because it's so comfortable. You know exactly what to do. You know, it's not healthy though. So figure out how to remove toxic relationships. And one way is healthy boundaries. Okay, that's like a fluffy word too. I'm not a big fan of fluffy words, but is hopefully you could still put something realistic to it. Healthy boundaries, okay? So if you picture like a yard, this is mine, that's yours, okay? And then they don't need to come into your yard, and it's like, no, this is my responsibility. Here's my boundary. Yes, no, and whatever goes with that. So it could be, you know, I now see concrete's hard. Give me examples of, you know, something that's really important to you and then the person just crosses your healthy boundary that you put up. Okay, sure. So that could go one way or the other, right? So you're like, look, you know, 50 billion text messages, it might be a little too much. You know, so you're like, look, I have to spend time with my family on Fridays. It's really important. So, you know, we can't hang out. Okay, and then they're mad for a week, you know, because you don't care about me or put me first. And so you're having these boundaries of what's important to you, and they don't care. You know, they're just crossing those boundaries. Anybody else? Somebody had something good. Yeah. You don't want what was the first thing? Drama. Oof, well, that's broad. You're going to have to hold a drama detector. No, yeah, that's good. So maybe it's the person is drama. So every time they see you, they have, oh my gosh, you wouldn't even believe. And they go into something and you're like, look, this it's important for me. You know, I don't want to talk negative about people. Or, you know, you say something like that. Every time they see you, like, you don't even know. And they start going into something negative. So how are you going to hold your boundary? That's the important part out of this. I don't care what it is. If you have a boundary, that is your boundary to hold. Everybody else's job is to come see if it's real. So when somebody comes trying to push your boundary, don't be surprised. It's your job to hold it. This is important to me. And then the friends that can't handle that will fade away. And you'll be left with people that respect your boundaries and everything's good to go. You're in a more likely situation to have a healthy relationship. Okay, sure. Yeah, so let's just say a concept that I like, a phrase is, how do you feel in that person's presence? You know, so if every time you're in that person's presence, you feel like a piece of whatever, you know, or, you know, it's they bring up something, so it's like you're extremely emotional. Some of that has to be on you to regulate your own emotions, but let's say it happens on a regular basis, and you're like, you know, I've asked many times, if they can't respect that, then it might be a sign of a healthy relationship or unhealthy relationship. Yep, one more. We'll go back here because you had one, and then we'll keep going for time's sake. Sure, and you could think codependency, another random word that we use often. We don't always know what it means, but one thing is, you'll feel like this person's sucking you into something, okay? So that's how I could describe it. That, you know, you're being pulled into something you don't want to go into and you don't even know why. So codependency, you know, you feel like you can't live without that person, that moment. If they tell you something nice, you have the best day ever. If they tell you something negative, you have the worst day ever. That kind of relationship is toxic because it's not real. Okay, we got to keep going for time's sake to get more good stuff in. You have to schedule and prioritize, and you might have to get creative. How are you going to build healthy relationships? But keep that at the top of your list, and that's on you. Some of these are tangible. That one, you've got to figure out. How are you going to have healthy relationships? Get rid of unhealthy ones. Go to the next slide. Physical health. So remember, I'm already connecting spiritual with biology and all this. It's true. And physical health is the same. Somebody said lack of sleep. You could end up with psychosis for lack of sleep, where you're seeing things and hearing things that aren't real. Sleep is very important. So that will be on your list. And that's different for every person. So don't stress. I don't really get 8 hours of sleep. And I don't care. But you still have to have the idea for yourself, enough sleep, exercise, nutrition. I'm not going to go into this because that'll be on you also to figure out what that looks like. But it is extremely connected with mood, perspective, how you think, all of that. It affects it. So there's not a lot you can do in life. This one you can. So whatever that looks like for you, start building a pattern of being physically healthy. Engage new senses, have new experiences. This can increase intelligence, and it can also heal the brain. So I don't care what it is now, except for I do. So I just, you know, think in terms of we're at church right now learning. Okay, but if you experience something new, see something new. One example in my mind is the first time I went to Yosemite. I was changed. my whole brain, I felt like a different person. It's just huge, you know, it's amazing. And yet also that's physical. Your brain physically changes when you see something like that that's amazing. So it could be water, fire, you know, sand. Engage your senses. If you're out physically seeing, touching, hearing, that actually can heal your brain. Okay, so don't forget to do that. I think we have a society that could. You know, it's fun, it's exciting, it's great, and yet we could skip it for weeks. So stay engaged with your senses. I'm going to do the hacking the sympathetic nervous system now, so go ahead and go to the next slide. So this I put on the physical side, but it's, again, interwoven. So that stress response can still do damage to your health and brain right now. So it's not over, right? If you stay stuck in a stressed out state, if you are experiencing trauma or something crazy like that right now, or if you get angry all the time and this system's turned on, you're going to mess up your health, your physical health, your digestion, and you're going to make poor decisions with your good thinking brain turned off, but also it's going to continue with the brain damage. So you don't want the system on unless your life's really in danger. Okay, so that's important because it is an amazing system, but we misuse it all the time. And you'll know it. Do you know what it feels like when you let something get to your head and you're super stressed out about it? Okay, or if you get so mad at somebody, you're seeing red. These types of things can still happen, or you're still in an unhealthy relationship where you have fear. This system's still on. So one main way is to try to keep it from turning on, and that's perspective. Okay, so how you view things is whether this system's going to turn on or not. If somebody held a gun to your head, that's a good time for your body to kick into gear, right? That's real. But if Starbucks is closed, that's mine, then it's not appropriate, but it feels so real. So you have to reinterpret the world around you. When bad things happen, when, you know, whatever it is, you have the power to shift your perspective on it. You cannot typically control the events. You can put yourself in stupid situations, but a lot of events you cannot control. But how you interpret them, you can. So you can be thinking, you can take deep breaths, you can consider, is this really the end of the world, or am I going to be okay? And you, if you let your brain go out of hand to get all stressed out about it, this system's going to kick on. If you curb it back and take responsibility for that and don't let it go there, then you're going to be in a better physical health situation. Know your red flags. So if something can get you riled up, know what it is ahead of time so that you can get out of a situation. So don't let yourself go that far. And mindfulness, relaxation. So if you were in a really, really stressful, scary situation, it is possible for you to learn tools to stay calm and handle it well. People do it all the time. Some of the tools we learned came from Navy SEALs. There's a whole bunch of research and study done at Point Loma that turned into tools for therapists because they have to control the system. They have to let their good thinking brain work in the middle of crazy situations. And they do it, but you can too. Anybody can learn those tools. So relaxation techniques, deep breathing, that can help. Keep going. How do you get it to turn off? Well, remember, the fight or flight is two opposite systems. If one's on, the other's off. If the other comes on, the other turns off, period, right? So if you can relax, typically through deep breathing, whatever else you got to tell in your head, if you can relax to where your heart slows down and your breathing's normal, you can trick your body into turning on the parasympathetic nervous system. It mimics what it's like to be relaxed. So if you learn tools to take deep breaths are the best because you get more oxygen to your brain and it slows your heart rate down. So seems silly, and yet it's the most effective tool. So if you can take deep breaths, talk to yourself, everything's going to be fine, calm yourself down physically, it will turn that parasympathetic nervous system off, on, turn your fight or flight off. So it's a good trick. Make your body relax, whatever it takes. Engage your senses and reframing. So even in the midst of being intense and everything's going crazy in your brain, if you can get a hold of your mind and say, relax, take a deep breath, it's going to be okay. Why don't you get yourself out of this situation and rethink it? So even if you're already having the system activated, it's possible for you to learn tools to get out and turn that system off. And you want this. If you are in a life situation where it's always going to be on, find ways to have breaks, because stress happens. Terrible things happen. So it's not that these things are happening, it's that it doesn't shut off. That's what will do the damage. So if you can take a break, have fun, have music, you know, do things that are enjoyable, and you have a break, you're not going to have long-term brain damage. If you stay in the mode where you're stressed out or filled with the system, it will continue to do damage. So take breaks, have things built into your life where you can have times of enjoyment. Okay, keep going. Spiritual. What we talked about a lot is almost everything from childhood to today to your future. The damage it will or will not do is on how you interpret it. That's powerful. So you have access to scripture and truth different than an average person. So if you feel like you're worth nothing, would you say that's accurate compared to scripture? No. So you've got a cool tool, okay? In reality, you are worth so much because you're created in the image of God, and you are God's, okay? That's awesome. And he cares for you, and he has a plan and purpose for you. Even if you don't feel like it, it's reality. Now, if you don't believe that, then you have to find other tools. But if you do believe that, that's truth. So that can make an impact. So I say purpose and vision. If you can just grab and throw in front of you some kind of vision of your future, what you want, okay? Hopefully God's involved in this, but just throw it in front of you, a vision of what you want to be in 5 years, 10 years. If you have that in front of you, and then terrible life things come, it's different. You go, yeah, bad things are going to happen, but I'm going for that. I'm going to persevere. It's worth it. Whatever comes and goes in life, you have something bigger in front of you, and it has to be big enough to last, okay? So this is like a lifelong journey, but I would start now thinking, what is your vision for the future? If you get that, changes all the minutiae here, ups and downs. You're like, I don't care. I'm going there. I'm going there. I'm going there. Yeah, I can guarantee you life's going to suck. I can't guarantee a lot, but there are going to be terrible things that come. And I think it's sad that our whole culture says, hey, just be happy. It's like, it's not realistic. In reality, you're going to have great days and terrible days. If you do everything God wants you to do and you're just amazing, still bad's going to come to you, because that's the life we live in right now. It's a cursed world. It just, you know, from Adam, I come from scripture. If you don't hold to everything I say, that's fine. But, you know, one day we were perfect and then we sinned and the whole world's cursed. You're going to grow old and die and have wrinkles and it sucks. But also great things happen. You know, you got, there's amazing things in life. Hopefully you've experienced, if not, you will. And it's you have both in this world. So if you get a vision in your future that makes sense of all the ups and downs, it's a game changer. So think about that and how you can get that in front of you. Using God's perspective, for example, scripture says, in this world you will have tribulation, but be of good cheer. God has overcome the world. So if your brain already knows things are going to come, and then they come, it's different. You're okay. And even with PTSD in the military, if guys that were going over and seeing terrible things, if they thought, hey, the world's terrible and there's terrible people everywhere, they were less likely to get PTSD. But if they thought, you know, people are so good and the world is great, and then they go see terrible things, they're more likely to have PTSD, where the brain's like, this doesn't make sense. So if you already know good's going to come, bad's going to come, it can have an impact on how you interpret the world. So get that from scripture, in my opinion. Otherwise, find something to have healthy perspective. I'm going to keep going because I want to have some time for questions. Responsibility. If you take no responsibility, you have no hope. whatever you can take responsibility for today to change, that's your hope. If there's nothing you can do different, you're going to probably have the same outcome, most likely. But if you find something you can take responsibility for, that gives you a chance that tomorrow will be different. It's where we find hope. And I say that because nobody likes responsibility, like the word, like, wow, thank you. But it's a good thing. That's where your hope is. So take responsibility for your thoughts. Take responsibility for your behaviors. Take responsibility for your relationships. This is not just coming to you and you have nothing you can do to have something different. It is up to you, okay? Take responsibility to set and have, I don't know what I put there, a purpose for your future. Even if it's blurry, get it up there so you have something you're working toward. Okay, I think that's it. Give me the next one. And then, yeah, I want to save a little bit of time for questions. Yeah, I'm back. Absolutely. It depends. That's always the answer, right? Depends. But in a general sense, it just keeps getting worse, and the more that happens, the more it cements it. I don't know if you guys like biology and the brain. Okay, so if you could picture from science books of like the neuron and the axons and how the brain's communicating, it shoots out chemicals, messages, and eats it up, it keeps going. And so you have something that's like this myelin sheath is what it's called. And, you know, you get it as your kid, it's getting there. And it can basically cement hard, it's not supposed to, with stress. And so whatever messages are being carried on that cements it hard so you can't break that message up. It cements it. So if you have terrible things happening and you're not worth anything message on this, then it's hard and it's just stuck. And then also you've got how the brain communicates with these messages. It's called nodes, and it like jumps and jumps and jumps. And so basically you can have negative messages go fast in communication, and then you can also have negative messages stuck depending on how the brain's wired. You don't have to remember all that. It's just to say it's physically stuck. But most of the time it can all repair. It's pretty cool. You're looking at a scan of a brain, and then it's changed. It's awesome. So I would never say that it's stuck forever. But I have had times where it seems like nothing helps a person. And that's more severe, where they're mentally not there anymore. You know, I work a lot with addiction. So usually it's drugs. Funny enough, marijuana, which is like, wow, because it changed over the years, and now it's a little different where somebody can lose their mind like on meth, but it usually on meth their brain comes back, and for some reason with what's going out there right now, I've got guys where their brain never comes back. So, and you're not going to know. We can kind of see why somebody's susceptible for it, but it's still a mystery. But 98, that's my percent of the time, your brain can heal. It's just like malleable. Just goes bad, goes good, by what you're giving it around you. Yeah. Addictive, fantastic, good question. Yeah, so chaos is addictive. Depression is addictive. Okay, so some of these chemicals can be addictive. Absolutely. It's not in every case. But when we're talking about this fight or flight, you want some adrenaline? Yes. You know, so this can turn into adrenaline junkies, you know, where they're doing high risky situations. And just like any addiction, you got to up the ante. It's got to get more intense, got to get more scary. So you can have situations where just that high risk situation, and then also the drama, the chaos. The stress, especially because it's what you've always done, is what your mom did. You know, my mom has definitely some of this. And so it's like, if I'm not really cautious and paying attention, I just go, drama. Like, it's so easy. Luckily, my husband's like, ah, no, like, go away, come back. So that's good. But it comes so natural, and it feels good. And that's hard to explain unless you've experienced it. There's something good about some of these things. It's addictive and very unhealthy. Yes. Sure. So sometimes when you can't control early on, in a lot of ways, you change it into external control, and that gives you peace and comfort. It only lasts for a half a second, but it's still comfort for just a moment, similar to an addiction. You know, so just a moment of comfort. So you'll do whatever it takes to get that just a moment of comfort, unless you're seeing where it's going. And usually it might take greater intervention to change that, because if you think of a habit, or you think of, you know, I don't know, whatever. For me, it's coffee, okay? But I don't know what your thing is, but it's like, it, to think of it not being there is very intense. Times 10, you know, for some experiences of OCD, it feels like you have to, or all terrible things are coming. And yet it's not true. And actually, some of the treatments for OCD are just mean, or I don't know what you'd call it, but it's like, don't do it. Because nothing will happen. But the feeling, the sense is you have to. So you could get into a pattern that seems to be healthy. I work a lot with addictions. Soon as they're off everything, what are they? The most fit person in the entire world. They have a regime of working out like you've never seen, and that's their new addiction. Now, is that better? Yeah. Could there be negative consequences? Sure. Usually everything to an extreme, the consequence is to relationships. So that's their new drug, and it's much better, and yet, you know, they lose relationships. So I think you're right on all that, and you'd have to be careful with that if that's already something you struggle with. What I'm going to do, I'm just going to stay around because I'm fine not going anywhere, but you guys have lunch. So I'm going to just make that, like, if you're starving and you got to get out of here, that's fine. But I'll stick around for other questions if anybody has it too. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Persecutor? Mm-hmm. Sure. Oh, you're just, that's my favorite. Okay, so just real quick. Okay, persecutor, you're always a bad guy. Everybody blames you. Victim, oh, poor me. Everything bad happens. This is not a real victim. This is a game you play in relationships. And then there's the rescuer or the hero. I'll help you. And it feels so good. And you're like, yes, I'm the rescuer. But guess what? The message of the rescuer is, oh, poor thing, you're so weak. Stay there weak. I got it. So it's not a good role to play. You're keeping other people weak to have your feeling of being a rescuer. It's not healthy. All three are lies in the game you play. So get out of it. And when you get out of it, you're going to be the bad guy because everybody will be mad. You're not playing your role. Yeah. Oh, wait, just a sec, because she had a question and you already asked her. Yes. Or maybe she didn't. Go ahead. Yes. Yeah. And all those roles. You could just take on the martyr. I'm the bad guy. Everybody's mean to me, and I'll just take it. F you, because blah, blah, blah. And you could play that role to not look at how you're hurt and sad and that, you know, your family doesn't seem to care. And then you can play the victim role. You can play the hero role, because it gives you a moment of relief. And it's better than looking at, hey, you should learn some healthy coping skills. You know, like, there's a video on being, like, overly emotional and overly victimized and, you know, all this. And instead, looking in the mirror kind of a thing and saying, hey, I can have good boundaries. I can say no. I can change my friends. You know, you have ability. It might not feel like it, but the reality is you can't. Now you have one. Yes. Yes, that's me. I have two cards. That's it. I was so proud that I had two cards. So you could take a picture of a card if you want back there. Yes. No, not necessarily, because if anybody had a good adrenaline rush, you get it. You know, you could be addicted to that even without trauma, right? You could be addicted to drugs without trauma, but almost all my guys have had severe trauma. So you can just get a high, love it so much that you keep wanting it, and it turns into an addiction, okay? But sometimes there's more there, and it's a relief instead of dealing with the past. So it could be a red flag, but it's not a guarantee every time. Yeah.
So suppose you had an addictive pattern, you set for your commit, but obviously your mind doesn't adjust to better. Does there ever come a time when that stops, when it stops being so easy to go back and do it?
Time absolutely matters. But, no, okay. So there's a piece that has been described as it whispers to me. And it's just there forever, especially depending on the drugs. Certain drugs, they're special. And it's going to whisper to you to the day you die. And you're not going to know when. It's been 30 years, you're at a family gathering, everything's fine, five kids running around, and you're like, oh, no. Here it is. So you've got to be ready for that. But time absolutely makes a big difference. Where it's not there often, but it's there. Yeah.
Is this the case with addiction besides drugs?
Well, I don't know which ones, but sex, pornography, absolutely. Like throwing them all out. eating. Yeah. I would say yes, because a lot of behavioral addictions are basically in dopamine. So dopamine is your body's drug high, you know, makes you feel good. Rush of dopamine. So a lot of those behaviors are in that, and it could be. But I would say it's different. I would say heroin is top of the list, where it's going to be a battle forever. And then some of the others are just as strong, but some are not. And once you're done, and every person's different. You know, I don't know how many people are like, hey, I was done, never went back to it. And then others, here we go again. Is that kind of answer? And you could ask me after if you want to more. Good question. So one thing is, God can heal anybody he wants whenever he wants, but he doesn't. I can't wait to talk to him about that. You know? So how I view it is we were perfect, and then Adam sinned, and then now we're cursed. We got diabetes. We've got, you know, depression. Mental illness is chemical. It is in the body. It is biological. So it's something you can see. You can influence it with your behavior. You don't always need medication. Sometimes medication helps. Whatever the case, I see it as a consequence of a cursed world. In that way, it's sin. And God can heal anybody he wants whenever he wants, but sometimes he doesn't. Same thing with addictions. He could just go, you're done, and people have that story. And they judge everybody else. What's wrong with you? You know, I'd stopped, and I've never wanted anything since. And this person, it's like, you know, time and time again, they're still struggling. So I do think there's some value, apparently, to struggle. And we see some verses that talk about how it builds perseverance, and it builds hope, and it builds character. So sometimes it's not gone. Yeah, somebody. Yeah. Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Now, I just say that for effect. There might be some difference, okay? But I just, it is stress. Stress, absolutely. You want to damage your brain, just start stressing out. Yeah, yeah. But there's hope. Yeah. Yes.
Anyways, so if you have like insomnia, you have to constantly back to sleep. In other words,
Absolutely. Yeah. There's some really, really cool tools out there for all that. So talk to me after, or take a picture of my card and email me, and I'll tell you about them. Yeah. Sure. Most of the time it doesn't work at all. So you can, you know, sneak things in where you're like, you know, I wonder if. Phrase it like that so it gets them thinking, like, think of Jesus. He just never answered a question. You know, he's always like, well, two guys were walking on a road, you know. So, you know, talk in a way where they see it for themselves. If you just give them the answer and you're standing out here, it's like awful for counselors, like, hey, I see it all, just fix yourself, do these five things and everything will be fine. And it doesn't work. You have to walk them in, help them see it for themselves. But what you can do is be there. That's the cool thing. If you have a healthy relationship with a person that has struggled with any of this, you're already helping. That's complicated. I would say, obviously, it's much helpful, more helpful if you can recognize it, because I can give you lots of tools and we'll go fast. But if I was helping you and you think everything's fine, nothing's wrong, then my job is to help you see little by little that you really have a problem. So I'm not giving you tools to be healthier. I'm helping you see it would be worth it to change. And so that's my job. So it shifts where you put your energy. There's no point in giving them all kinds of tools when they don't even see it. So save that, more shift to questioning, wondering, you know, to help them see there's some negatives. Yeah. Very good. So remember I said it's about perspective. So almost every time that I've dealt with somebody later in life that struggled and I hear that story, they believed lies about that divorce. So one thing you can do, I always say this is, you know, is there anything negative you believe about yourself coming away? And if they say, it was my fault, blah, 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 I say, do you see now as an adult that that's not true? How could it be your fault? It doesn't even make sense. And I'll question that. If they can see the truth out of the past, it is so healing. And isn't that scripture? And I was like, really what therapists are doing, sum it up in one sentence, is helping people switch the lies to truth. Now, there's a lot of therapists that do terrible at that. They don't even have truth figured out. But, you know, really, if you can help a person see that how they were viewing it is not true and here's truth, that's very healing. So that's one good thing you can do. Otherwise, healthy relationships. They had that hurt that's deep inside them. Today, healthy relationships can help repair that. Yeah. Sure. Not necessarily in that, how you phrase that question. Dreams are you trying to figure something out. So until you get that figured out, it may come. So go get it figured out. You know, I'm a therapist, so I'm biased. Like, hey, go get a therapy, you know? It doesn't have to be like, ah, I'm so crazy, I got to go get a therapist. They just have tools that are better. They're very cool. So, not therapists, but, you know, some are, but some aren't. But, you know, the tools are there. So you can have a Christian that loves their Bible and knows God with these tools so you feel comfortable. There's some great tools when it comes to dreams, insomnia, you know, depression, anxiety, that are very effective. So the dreams, I would say, thank you, dream, because it's telling you you haven't got it figured out yet. Your brain's still wrestling with it. Yeah. Yeah, dream interpretation. So Freud was awesome. They're just guessing in so many ways, but there's patterns to people, so sometimes it's dead on right. So because there's patterns in people, sometimes blue means something. But many, many, many times, it's a far reach to actually find a way to interpret dreams. I'm talking from psychology. If you have a spiritual gift from God to interpret dreams, I mean, that's awesome. But I have no idea on that. But for psychology and what we say, like, oh, we're going to interpret your dreams. And like Rorschach, the ink blot, now that one really works. I have no idea how, but it's really accurate. But we're just throwing something on a wall, guessing what it means. Sometimes we're really right, sometimes we're not.
And I think like the other people that have no feelings, like, you know, who are they? Are they crying? Like,
Well, one thing is sometimes whatever our thing is, it's not how we experience it, it's how others people experience it too. So for you, it might be a very great strength, and it truly may. So if somebody is a deep feeler, they can connect with people and help that other people heal in a very special way. So it's a powerful tool. But if other people are experiencing it as too much, or they feel drained, or they have these experiences, then that's something to consider. So it's not a negative for you, but it might be affecting others. And do you know how to manage it? So if you had really strong emotions and then everybody gets that everywhere you go, then that could cause problems. That could hinder you in life. Sure. Well, you know, yeah. Sure. Well, one thing I could say is there's huge differences typically between men and women, despite what society wants to say. I mean, they're wired very differently. So I've even got somebody like, stop! I tried. I told them. No. Okay, good. Yeah. Okay, good. So with that, you've got to have that compromise where he understands where you're coming from. Because it sounds like he's way over here, like many men, like, what in the world? Like, shh, what's wrong with this? And then we're like way over here, like, you're so mean and distant. So it's a very normal situation, but both have to be okay. He has to figure out what you want. Yeah. And then you have to have friends because you got to go over here because they'll say, guys, this is a generalization. 2 minutes of strong emotion. 2 minutes. So you got to have friends over here. So if you really want him to be connected to you and a part of it, then you go over here. 2 minutes of strong emotion. That's the typical amount they can handle. Some are emotional, and that's okay too. You know, we all defy patterns, so that's good. But so at least I normalized him, and hopefully one day somebody can tell him you're normal too. Yeah. All right, guys. I'm going to call it. I'll be around after if anybody wants. Come ask me questions. Thank you.